Hello, friends, and welcome to a mostly brand new Marvel Snap podcast. As always, I'm your friend, Roy Rogers, and joining me for this, the 12th episode of Snap Judgments, is my friend and yours, Aaron Glazer. Glazer, how are you doing this evening?
I am great. I'm really happy to be here and have a podcast with my good friend, Roy Rogers, tonight.
I'm also happy to be here with you. I came straight from our senior night basketball game at my school. It's been a good night overall. And we have a really exciting episode that sadly we are missing our fellow co-hosts, Will and Chris. Will is too cool to hang out with us tonight, but Lavin's not feeling well. So folks, send Chris your positive energy. We would absolutely, I know he would appreciate it. And if you would like to send that positive energy to Chris directly to him, or engage with us in social media in any other way, we have multiple ways now for you to be able to engage with us. All right, the first is, of course, our Twitter, which Aaron is every favorite Marvel Snap Creators reply guy, which is at SnapJudgePod. We have Snap Judgments Podcast on Facebook. So while your grandpa is looking at Fox News clips, you can be like, hey, also check out the Snap Judgments Podcast Facebook. But most importantly, we are on the Snap Fan Discord, where we have our own channels, which has a very lively community that we would really, really love for you, fellow listeners and friends, to join us. Because not only do you get all of our mostly unfiltered opinions and be able to engage with us about the meta and the game on a sort of instantaneous way, it's also supporting Snap Fan, which is the best Marvel Snap sort of resource website. So it's a win-win. You support us, you support Snap Fan, and you get some quality content. And last, but definitely least, if you are Aaron, is our email. And our email is snapjudgmentpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's snapjudgmentpodcast@gmail.com. All right, Aaron, we have gotten the socials out of the way. What are we doing in this episode?
All right. Well, before we get to what we're doing in this episode, I'd like to issue a quick apology to any listeners who joined us expecting to find the guest host we promised on our Discord and Twitter. We were expecting to welcome Chris the Bootman back, but unfortunately, Roy and I got our wires crossed and sort of gave him the wrong time. And we can't expect our good friend to wait for us all night. So we've invited him back. He will hopefully be joining us next week. But what we are talking about this week is, 10,000 different things, as we always do. Nerfs in the metagame, 1,000 questions, 2 deck guides, quick reviews of all the cards, and figuring out where we are this season. How you doing, Roy?
How am I doing? Well, I mean, I guess we should also talk about how we finished last season as well, right? I mean, for Aaron, that's easy. Which he just finished Infinite. But for me, I had a long quest to get out of the 60s. I was stuck at 66, back and forth, going down to the 50s, coming back up to the 60s. It was quite the roller coaster. And it ended up being that I finished at a very nice rank of 69. With like 5 minutes left, we were what? 4 cubes, Aaron? Mm-hmm. 5 cubes away from 70? Yep. Couldn't quite get there. You know, it was a nice time on the ladder, but definitely not a month I super enjoyed. I'm hoping to have a little bit more success this month. I haven't played much this week. I'll probably play a bunch over the weekend. I'm currently at 37 because I got kicked down to 30 on Monday.
I've climbed at basically the same rate as Roy. I was infinite last season. I believe we talked about that because we reviewed the deck. But I am 76 now. I started playing last Tuesday with the new season, and honestly, just playing 1,000 Zabu and Surfer decks over and over again got very boring for me, and I just needed to take a break. So I just did my dailies until fundamentally, literally today. Today, I climbed from 70 to 76. It felt like it was the right time for me to try to do so. I found a deck that we're going to talk about later this episode, and we started this podcast at 9 p.m. EST. I started playing at about 5 minutes to 8 p.m. EST, and I gained 6 ranks with it. So I feel like I'm probably just going to ride that for as long as it rides.
Awesome. That is really awesome. So hopefully when we record our next episode, you'll be in the 80s or the 90s, maybe even infinite. We'll see.
Well, all right. Our next episode might be too soon because we're recording again on Monday. Today is Thursday to pull back the curtain. We are recording again in 3 days unless my wife decides she doesn't like me this weekend and thus I end up playing a lot of Marvel Snap. It doesn't seem like I'm going to get quite that far.
I mean, 80s, you can make
it. I'm reasonably sure I'll be in the 80s. I think I will potentially be around 90, but we'll see. Let's not get too greedy. Often, sharp rises are met with sharp falls in this game.
That is true. That is the Marvel Snap Ladder extraordinaire. So, as always, we're going to start with listener questions, and we really appreciate everybody who's been asking us questions both on the SnapFan Discord, again, you should definitely join us there, and on Twitter. Nobody on Facebook yet.
I don't even post the call for questions. Much like our email, I don't really super... I post our episodes on the Facebook page, and everyone summarily ignores it, except for our four Thrones friends who all like it, and I don't have it in, hey, if you're in the Facebook group, I think you're very likely a decent person because you came and found us, right? But, a lot of that group is just complaining about things that, when Zabu and Surfer got nerfed last night, the meltdown had me, dying laughing, or two nights ago. And it's just, I can't, it's a card game, and I understand you're invested, and we put a lot of time into this, but you gotta chill. It is not life. What? Breathe.
Wait, we put a lot of time into this, Aaron? That doesn't strike me.
Yes, we're definitely not spending tonight talking about it.
All right, speaking of talking about it, so Neil Greenberg on Twitter asks, what would be a fair rate of Series 4 and Series 5 cards on reserves for Series 3 complete players? Right now, there's little incentive to buy bundles, just getting titles and avatars.
I know my answer for this. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Go ahead.
So I think it stays the same for when you are Series 3 incomplete. But when you're Series 3 complete, it goes to one in every 25 boosters you open. Whereas right now you get one card every 8 to 10. You basically triple that. Right? So it goes one to every 25. You get a Series 4, which is still slow as crap, right? But it doesn't feel nearly as bad as it is right now. That works so far?
That works so far for me. Yeah.
And then you make the previous Series 4 pity timer, which is whatever insanity, 1 in 80, right? You make that the new Series 5 pity timer. Once your Series 3 complete. Pool 3 complete, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I think there's a logic to that. I think the biggest problem for Marvel Snap is Series 5, mm-hmm. and the fact that it is both where things like Galactus and Thanos and maybe a card we're going to talk about later, Kang the Conqueror, maybe even Null, right, are supposed to live forever as these rare, super cool, super villain cards. But it's also how you introduce the new mediocre playables or meta answers, or cards that are going to very quickly become Series 4, like Shuri or Valkyrie, or these cards that are just regular Marvel Snap cards. I think that Series 5 should not be where most new cards are introduced. I think most new cards should just be introduced into Series 4.
I could live with that.
And then there's a few cards, Galactus, Thanos, whatever, these chase rares that you not every player is going to have, right? But so that will, one, a card like Galactus won't be that super common, or other cards, if Kang the Conqueror ends up being obnoxious or whatever, you people will only see it, a smaller number of games. But most cards enter into circulation relatively quickly, I think, is a good way to do it. I think... Also, broader speaking, Marvel Snap has a huge rarity problem. I think this is just going to be a huge plague on the game, which is that Marvel Snap is trying to solve the problem of how you create novel experiences through really false card scarcity. This ends up having the worst of all worlds. There's the homogenizing sort of way Hearthstone or Magic Arena, on a whale side, where whales get to have access to all the cards that they want, and sort of free to play and sort of dolphin people kind of can have like one deck, but not really get a full collection very easily. Or like Legends of Runeterra, where it's very free to play friendly and everybody has a full collection. Like they're trying to like thread the needle there in a way that I just doesn't think work. Like if you followed early Hearthstone and Brode is running it, he loves novelty. Like, and he wants people to have like novel experiences, and this like weird false scarcity that they've created here, I think it's just unsustainable. There's just like not enough cards in Marvel Snap to create this kind of false scarcity. And the fact that you could just reach a point where you're not opening cards and you're still spending money and time is super weird. Also because the rewards are terrible. I think if they put more variants, like if I was opening a variant, like every, you know, what, 4 times or 10 times even, like I would feel better about opening stuff, right? I'll just own, I bought the Mr. Negative bundle and it was the least fun I've ever had opening Marvel Snap stuff. I got no cards. I got like a couple of decent variants, maybe, and some tokens. And I was like, at the end of it, Glazer was with me. I was like, that was it? Like that, I didn't get a single series 4 card. I wasn't expecting a series 5, but like I was expecting at least one series 4. And I didn't get any of that. And it was just like, kind of just like, oh, okay. I spent most of my gold on this for a sweet Mr. Negative variant and to make some of my cards look better. Okay.
I mostly agree with that. I think disincentivizing whales is a problem. My conversation with Neil on Twitter, and Neil is phenomenal on Twitter. If Neil Greenberg, if you can follow him, you should. Excellent Twitter follow. But our conversation was fundamentally like, I think certain cards, and we'll discuss this more later, should get nerfed. And he's like, why aren't there just more powerful cards in that card slot so you have actual choices? It's like, well, there are, but they won't be here for 6 months. So like the other cards have to get nerfed. Otherwise, they're like, I'm just going to say it now. Like, I think Iceman, Scorpion, Armor, and Sunspot should get -1 strength. Like from where they are right now. They're not played for their power, but at least they win slightly fewer games if they're one less power, right? Like it's not a huge nerf, but I think it's probably good enough for the time being while we wait for cards like Bass to be in series 3. Because like Bass might get played over Iceman, and Ghost will often get played over Iceman. I think those are the like, but because these cards are months and months and months away from being really playable to a large portion of the base, we end up with just the same cards over and over again. Given that it's going to take so long for like anything to become the new best in slot, right? And like when the best in slot card is a series 4, series 5, or season pass card, we found out what that does to the game and what that does to the player base. So like we need a solution. And I think as more people are pool 3 complete, a lot of these complaints go away, but this game then becomes extremely new player unfriendly. So there has to be some kind of balance.
I agree with your impulses there, but I think the problem with nerfing cards, because some cards won't be available right away, but will be available in some fixed point in the future, is a terrible idea. Because like Bast was designed in a world where Iceman was playable at its current power, so with Sunspot or whatever, right? So then you'll just end up having to nerf Bast, right? I think the issue, your broader point of like making particularly Series 4 cards like more accessible to the player base, I think solves a lot of those problems. But I think the fundamental issue is just like how slow Series 4 and Series 4 Pity Timer is. Like, I personally think that you should get rid of the Series 4 Pity Timer for people who are pool 3 incomplete. So pool 3 people are like always opening something, right? And the Pity Timer should come in for people who are Series 3 complete, right? So every,
I just think,
30 or whatever.
Sure, but it's 80 whatever. Right now. And like, no,
I
just
know, 80 is ridiculous.
I just think ridiculous. That's ridiculous. It should be like 25, 30, yeah.
30 is where I would probably be.
And there needs
30 is a lot.
Look, there needs to be some kind of pool 5 Pity Timer. I don't care if it, like, that can be 80. 80 is absurd. Like, just make it, put a real Pity Timer on it. Give people a chance.
That's fair. I think we've sort of talked this topic to death, though. Mm-hmm. So why don't we move on to... All right, Glazer, I'm going to have you ask this one because you can pronounce this person's username.
Jesus. Jacavio. Hey, bud. Cast and host thoughts on the no refund policy. People are whining about compensation for the nerfs to the pass and token trap cards. But what part of the no refunds do people not get? I have my own reasons why I think it's a good policy, but what do you guys think? Roy, what do you think?
I think that currency is too scarce in Marvel Snap for them to offer refunds. Mm-hmm. And like particularly like what people might want, which is... tokens. There we go. I was looking, thinking tokens. I was actually thinking about this a lot this morning. Like tokens, just straight up letting someone buy a new card, like just breaks the Marvel Snap economy. And like, I was like, well, why don't you just give credits then? But credits also, like, they give, say, 1500 credits or however much it is to like turn something infinite. Like, that's what you get reward. You can, one of your cards, you get that much credits. But like, credits are the primary like breakpoint for most players. Mm-hmm. And if they give those away, they are like going to damage their own economy. I think the Marvel economy, Snap economy is so bad, like fundamentally at like the way it operates, that if you start giving refunds, you have a huge issue. I mean, much less people who want a monetary refund, mm-hmm, for Zabu. That's just ridiculous. Like, Hearthstone doesn't do that. No game, Magic Arena didn't do that. Like, no game gives you your money back because they changed a card. That's ridiculous. I think one final thing is you do not really want, and you see this in, I mean, we'll go back to Magic. Like, Magic can't redesign cards, at least, you know, it can't paper. And them being afraid, but Magic designers were afraid to ban Chase Mythic cards because of the financial investment that players put in them. And that's really bad for metagames, right? There's cards that in Magic's history should have been banned, but were not because they would damage the sales of a set, or they cost $50 a card, and then players who play primarily standard would lose, like, you know, what, $200 in value, and they don't want that to happen. So I think Marvel Snap, from the beginning, saying there are no refunds, so we will not take the impact of the economy of our balance changes, I think fundamentally is good because it avoids that trap that Magic designers fell into, and the Marvel Snap economy sucks so much that I think it just is what wins out.
Cool. My answer is a lot simpler. Buyer beware. Look, you're buying a card in a card game. Card games must be balanced to be fun. If they're game runs unbalanced, it won't be fun. You're going to lose much more money in the long term when the game dies. Right?
That's fair.
Game stops being That's fun. Fair. People are going to stop playing. Like, if that Zabu meta was still this season, I'd be playing my dailies until it went away. Like, I was bored of it. It happened. It was everywhere, and I didn't need it again. Jacavio, I believe we answered your second question already, so let's move on. Tom B asks, one of the things I'm trying to understand better is early, turn three or earlier, card placement. If there are no revealed locations that skew your decision-making, what do you think about when positioning early cards? How do you consider no locations? And though likely deck-specific, what do you think about when matching or avoiding their placements? Do you have an answer? I have an answer.
You are the more expert on this, so I think being a foil to your thinking about this is more useful for our listeners than laying out my attitude.
What is the card? What does my deck do? Can my deck get into unreachable locations? If my deck can get into unreachable locations, I play safely. I play in the clear location that is visible almost all the time. If my deck struggles with unreachable locations, however, I will often play blind. There are Sanctum Sanctorum is a fairly common location to see. So is the destroy one that's name escapes me. And the energy destroy one is also a location, right? Death's Domain and then some Death's Altar? Sure. I believe those are the names. Those are fairly common to see, and being able to sneak something in there early will often just win that location and steal the game. It's a really nice thing to be able to do. And Bar with No Name is also nice to get into. There are, I believe, Luke's Bar? Whatever. Two locations, three locations that really punish you for doing this. Space Throne, Bar with no name, which less power wins. And that's it, right? Is that it?
The bridge.
And the rickety bridge. But you're playing a one drop or two drop at that point. So, like, don't play your high value cards there by any means. Like, if you're running the two cost Zaboo and that's like a key part of your deck, you would never play it in a spot that you don't think is safe. I'm also really careful with playing my ongoing cards into X Mansion, because X Mansion loves when I do that, having one of us play Enchantress. But like, I know it's variants, but like, it's like the worst feel bad, right? So if your card is pivotal to your deck, your game plan, what you're doing, play it where it's safe, in the one location that's safe. If one location is not clearly safe, like if the first location is terrible for you, or just like if you have Ant-Man on one, right? And like in the first location is no ongoings, don't just drop Ant-Man there. Just play Ant-Man mid. You'll know whether it's a good or bad play like almost immediately thereafter, right? But like in general, my general practice is to use those blind spots, use those blind plays as a way to reach locations potentially where I couldn't otherwise. And sometimes that loses anyway, because my opponent can reach there anyway. But often enough that I think there's EV lost by not doing it, you can steal a game that way. And again, two quite rare locations are your downside. Oh, don't do it with like Angela. See, people do Angela all the time and it's wildly confusing. Like if the card is part of a game plan, if it needs more cards to be played there, then it's a bad play.
Yeah, I think for me, a heuristic that I've been trying to work with here is like, how vital and also is it to your strategy? So like Quinjet is a good example of this. Like a deck running Quinjet is going to definitely want to throw Quinjet into the Quinjet lane, which is a safe location. In some cases that can be Sunspot. Like if your deck is a deck that passes a lot early in the game, making sure you're building up your Sunspot is really useful to your game plan. You want to be conservative with it. But, you know, Glazer's such a huge fan of turn two armor in the unknown lane, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, a very safe play, because, like, at the end of the day, most of the time, armor is a nice-to-have card and a tempo play, but not a must-have card. And armor invalidates a lot of plays into that unknown lane in the future, right? Death's Domain, Altar of Death, but also, like, things like Shuri's Lab that make your cards really big and get blown out by Shang-Chi. So, like, that's really good. So, for me, the easiest heuristic here is, how valuable is this card to your game plan? If it is super valuable to your game plan, like a Quinjet, like a Zaboo, like a Wong, known lane, as safe as possible lane. If it is a card that is expendable, a Scorpion, an Iceman, these kind of cards, it is best to just sort of YOLO it into one of the unknown lanes and sort of hopefully get some minuscule advantage that sometimes more than minuscule advantage that you would get from getting an Iceman in a Sanctum Sanctorum against a Shuri opponent that can't get into other lanes, like unaccessible lanes. So that's my take on that. All right, so our last question of the evening is from Mudham, and they ask, which archetype do the casters, that's us, like best and why? And which do they feel needs the most improvement from the developers? According to Mudham, that is Move. Aaron, what is your take on this question?
So my answer is actually also my answer to Mudham's second question. I think control has kind of been forced out of the meta outside of like real classic control, right? Like the Toxic Spider-Man thing to me doesn't really count as control. That's just kind of being a jerk, right? Like that's not like there's no interactivity. There's no playing or outplaying or anything of the sort. So I think control. And so I built a control deck. I've got a Sarah Miracle control, and I think Ghost is the key card. I don't have Ghost yet, but I've got 6,000 tokens and a couple days more to wait. But once I have Ghost, the deck will be Ghost. It is currently Ant-Man. Ant-Man is very good and kind of underplayed. Goose, Mojo, Mysterio, Lizard, Scorpion, Zabu, Bishop, Shang-Chi, Enchantress, Rescue, and Sarah. I'd like a better four than Rescue, but one doesn't currently exist, and I would assume won't be happening for a little while. However, Rescue on three with a, if you can get out an on curve Zabu, is absolutely excellent and gives you a lot of options. It's also really nice to be able to, when possible, go Rescue into Mysterio. There's 1,000 interesting little plays with the deck. One obvious one is Enchantress your Lizard. Make sure that you can Enchantress your Lizard to keep that 5 strength. The ongoing is what takes away the strength. Also be careful of your Ant-Man and Mojo when you Lizard. I really, really like Goose and Mojo to be my play on 4, or Goose and Mysterio to be my play on 4, because I know where they haven't played, and usually by turn 4 or 5, if they haven't played in lane, they're planning on playing big stuff there, and Goose at that point is absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, Mysterio is always played after Bishop. That's plus 3 strength. It's how Bishop gets big. Bishop ends up being about an 8 or 9 in this deck almost always. What other little plays are there? The Mysterio clones were a source of frustration for me because they're often doing nothing. Think long and hard about where you're sticking your real Mysterio and basically never play Mysterio. I'd rather skip 2 than play Mysterio on 2. But the other thing, besides triggering Rescue that those Mysterio's clones do, is they give you a nice chance of hitting your Ant-Man or Mojo boost. And obviously, you want Sarah on 5. Ideally, you've set up one location so that you're going to win it without both Enchantress and Shang-Chi. That's the reason armor is not in the deck. I found that when armor was in the deck, I often had to Enchantress my armor to then Shang-Chi their thing, which is intensely frustrating for this kind of deck. But because there's other things you want Enchantress and other things you want to do on the last turn. But if you can if you can either Enchantress or Shang-Chi to surprise win a lane, and you have one other lane locked down, you're just going to win the game 99% of the time. It works fantastically. So the ideal play pattern is something like Ant-Man into Lizard into... Sorry, excuse me. It would be Ant-Man into Zabu, into Bishop, into... preferably Mysterio and Goose into Sarah into like a miracle turn. That, and at that point, if you have Zabu and Sarah, you've got a 2-cost Shang-Chi, a 2-cost Enchantress, and then you can still play 2 other 2-drops for 1-cost, for example, Lizard and Mojo, wherever they would be most effective. Or Ant-Man is obviously a natural one, and 1-4 is a really great rate. So that's how I play that deck. That is my favorite archetype. And Control, getting Ghost, but is the archetype I'd like to see get the most help.
Well, archetype that I get the most help, I think, inarguably for me, is Move. Like, classic Move, I think, is in a pretty weak spot here. Maybe also Bounce. Like, the Bounce deck is, like, really fun. And it does one of my favorite things in card games, which is moving cardboard, or I guess in this case, pixels, to different zones kind of randomly. Gotta love it. For me, my favorite archetype is combo, particularly like combo control. So sort of decks where you are able to answer a little bit of what your opponent is doing, building up maybe a little bit of tempo, and then you do something giant that goes over the top of what your opponent is doing. I think is really fun. I really enjoy coming at games like this sideways. So, for example, my current favorite deck is the Luke Cage Hazmat combo deck, which I was having a good amount of success with last night to try to get the quest that you have to win by 10 or less. That deck is really good at winning by 10 or less, let me tell you. Although also for a while I was winning a bunch of cubes and drew Spectrum with that deck a bunch. But because that deck, one of the great things about the version that I'm currently playing is that it has two end games. It has both the Hazmat end game and it has a Spectrum end game, both of which are really good and sort of can surprise your opponent out of nowhere. They're expecting you to Hazmat them, but instead you go over the top of them with Spectrum, or they're thinking you're some kind of weird destroyer deck and you Hazmat them. It's all in good fun. So that is my sort of favorite archetypes in card games in general, is combo/combo control. For example, I'm a huge fan of Is It Creativity decks if you are a Magic the Gathering player. And it is what I got known for in my brief time in Thrones, being a successful player, was playing combo control. So we have no more questions because you went over your Sarah Miracle guide. So let's get to what people really want to talk about, which are the nerfs. So was this Wednesday night?
Tuesday night, I believe.
Was it Tuesday night?
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
Tuesday night, so a day after the initial patch.
No, a week and a day after the initial patch.
Oh,
no?
Sure, a week and a day. I was more thinking about the beginning of the new season, but yes, a week and a day after the patch. Mm-hmm. And the day after the new season began, Zabu was reduced to a 2 strength, 2 cost.
No, it was yesterday. You're right. It was Wednesday. You're 100% right. Because okay. If it came out, we wouldn't have done the white book. I would have been play.
Okay. So, again, Zabu was reduced to a 2/2 who reduces the 4 cost cards that you play by 1. And then Surfer was buffed to a 3 cost, 2 strength that makes all of your 3 cost cards on reveal be +2 strength. So let's start with Zabu. Glazer, what do you think of Zabu?
I think that this is a much more appropriate card. I think he's genuinely much more fun now. I am enjoying playing Zabu in numerous things. It's harder to pull off. It actually requires thought and skill. It's not just degenerate slap Zabu down snap anymore. I'm sure the best players in the game will be fine without their abusive Zabu decks. And for the rest of us, Zabu's win rate wasn't like way above the fold according to the data people at Marvel Snap, the name now escapes me, but the data people at Second Dinner proper. So it was just the sheer omnipresent nature of Zabu that was quickly becoming frustrating. The people who were great with Zabu were hitting ranks stupid, right? Like 600 and 450 and all sorts of nonsense. But like for everyone else, it was every deck because it was so successful for certain people. And like getting rid of that and instead making a 2/2 that's -1 to 1 specific cost is perfectly fine. It is far, far, far weaker, which is good because it was broken before, but it is also still strong and useful.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I think it's much closer to sort of like how Sarah plays out on the fight. If you get Sarah in only on the last turn, this sort of like slight reduction that really does help with tempo, but doesn't necessarily overwhelm, like invalidate everything that happened before. And considering that this is a card that you can play on the second turn of the game or previously the third turn of the game, that's really good. And the fact that, you know, you can only until the last turn, you can only play 1 4-drop. Is like a huge thing, right? Yeah. It's just like it cannot be underestimated, like just how huge that is, right? And so that I think just makes the card much fairer. I think that this is, of the two nerfs, I think this is the cleanest and also keeps truest to the quote unquote heart of the original card. And anyone who tells you that they feel robbed by this card, by, you know, they just paid $10 for this card is still worth $10. If this version of Zabu was the Battle Pass card this month, I would still recommend that you buy it. But do you agree or disagree with that, Glazer?
Oh, I very much agree. I think it's right now kind of about as good as Zabu, maybe a touch worse, but like not Zabu, as good as MODOK, maybe a touch worse, but like absolutely in the same range. And I recommend buying MODOK as well. So yeah, I think Zabu is still very good.
What about Surfer?
Wait. Where is Zabu's new home now? Where do you play Zabu?
Tempo decks. And I think he's also still really good is decks that run fours for utility or as like an enabler of something that you want to do while also playing like a two cost card. So for example, I really like him in the Hazmat deck because he more easily allows you to do like Wong and a two drop on five. And that's still a really powerful play. And it lets you do something like, you know, Moon Girl on three to copy some Hazmats. And then you play Wong Hazmat on turn five. And then you play additional Hazmat on turn six. And that's really strong. Like, I think it's sort of those situations. Similar, like, I guess you could say, like, Dark Hawk decks could also probably do that. Or
the Internet Died Again.
Devil Dino decks. Like, I think those kind of places that you want to do something like a four on five with a two drop, I think is where you want him.
Okay, so I'm going to go over some specific things. First, he goes in basically every Magic and Sarah deck at this point. If those decks are playing any fours, he goes in them. Magic decks on four often want, like, if you're playing Shang-Chi / Enchantress, you want Zabu in the deck, even if it's only for those two. He is better Psylocke for Mr. Negative decks, even if that is the only four drop in the deck, that is still absolutely excellent. Mr. Negative decks that are not Surfer Negative decks got a huge boost from Zabu. He's also really good in your big stuff decks that are using either Shuri or Wong or Shuri and Wong. That can't be your only win condition. That can't be like your game plan like it was before, because it's literally just unplayable if you don't get Zabu. But the Infinite deck we're going to review earlier, I threw a Zabu into. And the Zabu has allowed me in X percentage of games to go snap Zabu, Wong, Shuri, win the game. So those are the different situations I like him in. If you have a big combo, if you need your control pieces to be able to be played at once, and Mr. Negative, who's sort of a combo of both of those things.
I think that's fair. So what about Surfer? What do you think of what happened to Surfer, Aaron?
I think it's a tier 2 deck now. I really would like to be proved wrong, but I think that Surfer always had to give up a lane. Right? Like, when you were playing Surfer, there was almost always just sort of a toss-it-away lane. It's part of the reason that KM Best didn't always run that Storm Juggernaut package, because he felt like he was, like, it was limiting in his locations, and it was limiting in, like, he could choose where to contest more freely otherwise, rather than being limited with where he could play Surfer and so on. Because where you're playing Surfer, unless it was also the just Brood Surfer final turn thing, was often complicated. Especially because you had Cosmo in your deck very often, and so did your opponent. The board got very full, which left you one place left to play Surfer. Now, if you stormed it, that would be a problem, right? Now, Surfer having two means that, like, it's going to contest that lane. Yeah, it's going to contest that lane that you might otherwise have had to give up. But it's still not pumping itself, right? So, like, it's two is fine, but it's not enough. It's still an awful lot of strength, right? But the problem, the way I've tried to explain this overall, is that to make Surfer good, you have to have, like, an abundance of threes in your deck. You can't have, like, three threes, because Surfer has to be your turn six or turn five into another combo and six play. And if you only have two or three threes, you're just not getting enough stats from him. It's not better to not just play three, four, five at that point. Which means that he's got a problem. I do still think he has a home. I think that home is likely in Patriot decks, because Patriot decks are incidentally running those threes, and some of them have terrible stats, and he can help you steal and gain extra power in those decks. But outside of that deck in particular, I don't think Surfer is very good right now, and I very much hope I'm wrong, because I was a big fan of that card.
Yeah, I definitely think that, like, particularly I think the negative Surfer decks are kind of dead. I haven't run into like a single one of them in the lower ranks.
Which I did, but Surfer, I beat it.
Surfer like infested the lower ranks before because it was like an easy card to assemble, like a deck to assemble if you bought the season pass. It didn't really require a lot of non-pool three cards besides Surfer himself, who you could just get with your credit card. I think that Surfer is now in line with all of the other powerful things you can do in the game, except for Shuri. So I think when Shuri gets nerfed, which I have a feeling that she will get nerfed, I think Surfer will be on point. So
I think Shuri is the best card in the game, but I'm not sure she's getting nerfed.
Well, that brings us to the next question. Well, I guess, right, because we talk about like what deck? We did talk about what deck
Surfer is. Yeah, I think there's just one unless you have others. Like, I don't think the core Surfer is very good anymore. I played it some earlier today. It's fine.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, I think it's like, I think it's fine. Like, yeah. I think you can gain cubes, but I just don't think that it's going to like grab cubes and you have to be way more thoughtful about what you do. And I think you're just stuck playing a Surfer deck in the ways in which, like, I think your better point about, like, I think you could kind of play like random decks that had like 4-3 drops, maybe even 3-3 drops plus Surfer previously and get away with that, but you can't do that anymore. And so Surfer has to be much more of a dedicated deck, which is one of the reasons why I think negative Surfer is not good anymore. And I think Maximus is a much more important card to Surfer than he was before. And he was still a pretty good card in that deck, don't get me wrong. Turning him into a 10 was really strong. But like, I feel like negative Surfer didn't need him in a way in which like negative Surfer needs something like a Maximus effect, but you can't get a Maximus effect with that deck.
Well, yeah, you can. It's Wolfsbane.
I mean, yeah, Iron Man. Or I guess Wolfsbane. Yeah, but that's still not as good as...
Well, none of it's as good, right? Like, that's the point. They made the card worse.
Yeah, I meant, I'm not talking about Surfer, I'm talking about specific, they didn't change Rain, Wolfsbane.
I mean, so. No, but like, I think Wolfsbane is the most underrated card in that deck. Wolfsbane often just won a lane by herself. You just wong, slap down Surfer, slap down Wolfsbane. It's like, well, shit.
That's fair. You mean the other way around, by the way.
Wolfsbane, Surfer. Yeah, wong, Wolfsbane, Surfer. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
So cards we want to see nerf. I'm just gonna say Shuri. I don't necessarily think she needs to get nerfed, but I think she puts a high ceiling on what good Marvel Snap decks can do. And it's like it's a card that fundamentally sets the boundaries of the format. And I think she was better in that case when she was Series 5. And only lucky people like me had access to her. So, you know, this elitist point. But just the fact that she is now ubiquitous, like, across all levels of your ELO and rank, is a sign that she's putting a hard, hard ceiling on what the meta can do. And I think it's one that people are going to get sick of eventually. Just like the Zabu Surfer stuff. So that's my take. I think that's really the only card I would like to see nerfed.
So I, again, want the Iceman Scorpion and Armor Sunspot thing nerfed. I said that earlier. I stand by it. I think that, like, I just hate going, oh, which of the two possible 1-2 packages are you running, right? Because there are, at this point in the game, unless you are doing something hyper-specific like Deadpool or a Destroy deck, right? Like, those go in just basically every deck, and I don't like that. I don't like just good card packages. I feel like they're like they need to exist, but they shouldn't be that obvious and consistent. Like, it's also, in general, one drops without doing anything else shouldn't win the game, and Iceman wins the game a little too much for me. I mean, Lizard wins games. Sunspot, like your early plays should be enablers unless they're like build arounds, right? They shouldn't just be going any deck and can win game in any deck, I think, is my big point for them. Besides that, I don't necessarily want to see anything nerfed yet. I can see Shuri getting nerfed down the line just because like some of the Red Skull stuff is obnoxious. Some of the Black Panther stuff is obnoxious. I think the nerf for Shuri, if we get there, is likely simple. What they're going to end up doing is like make it a 5, right? That seems to be their thing. And I don't think that does like, I think that just sort of kills it. I think that makes it, like, kind of shitty. Even if it's, like, a 5-4, I think that's just bad. I don't think make it be in this lane is a bad nerf, and I think that would basically bring the card in line.
So it'd be like unrevealed, the next card you play in this lane is...
Yeah. If the next card you play is in this lane, it gets double strength. So yeah, you can't just play like five other things and come back to that lane on turn six.
That's fair. I think... Actually, the biggest problem with Shuri is actually Taskmaster to me. Because it like can invalid... It means that that giant strength can be in twice. Two lanes. Right. And I think... The games where they just have Shuri Red Skull or Shuri whatever their big thing is, and they don't have Arlem Zola or they don't have Taskmaster, like those are fair games that I think it's fair that you get a billion strength in one lane, and it's like, okay, you've locked this lane down, cool. Then you can just play a card in last turn and just lock in another lane. I think that is really where the toxicity of, you know, the toxicity, I'm putting that in, like, in scare quotes. I don't think Shuri is like super out of line, but I do think it does. That's where the ceiling comes. The fact that it's not just, this is a deck that's really good at capturing one lane and then has to contest for a second. It's like, if I capture one lane, there's a 50-50 chance I've also just automatically captured a second. If that's, there's not a dog.
That's fairly reasonable. So Zola doesn't bother me nearly as much as Taskmaster, because Zola, there's just a lot of answers to. Right.
Yeah, there's armor, there's...
Yeah, yeah. Whereas Taskmaster, it's like, you generally have, like, a 50-50. Yeah? And, yeah. Like, so that's much more frustrating. And that there's, like, the optionality of playing both. And then there's the play we'll talk about later, which is just, like, Shuri, pass 5, She-Hulk, Taskmaster for 220s, right? Like, that's usually plenty good.
Yeah, that's very good.
So
two Infinauts, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, two Infinauts on... Yeah, seems nice. So, like, I don't know. All these in combination seem like they are problematic. But a lot of that is literally just Taskmaster. So,
yeah, I mean, that could be the card that needs to get hit. I mean, Taskmaster, I think, is going to be, like, a problem card. Yeah, I think it's a well-designed card, like, a top-down design. Where, you know, what would Taskmaster do in the context of a card game like this? Oh, copying someone's power is just like really good. But I think the card is going to cause long-term issues without, like, maybe if it's like, you know, the last card you played in this lane,
right?
Double its power, something like that.
Yeah. The same fix I had for Shuri, more or less.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move into what else, what we've got to talk about? MODOK. All right, Aaron, you were a Mo doubter. What do you think about MODOK?
It has been 2 days and I'm wrong. MODOK is very good. He is not broken. I'm already seeing people go, but he's broken. How do I stop MODOK? It's like, man, just play a fucking Cosmo and use your brain, right?
Yeah.
Like Cosmo's like it's not gonna stop it every time, right? Like it can beat Cosmo, but it sure doesn't always. Like, and good lord, if you add a Cosmo and Enchantress, so that deck is in trouble.
Rogue is also bad news for that deck.
Yeah,
so.
When people used to get the whole Hella combo, I would just sit on my Polaris until turn 5, wait for them to drop their 5, Polaris that crap away, and have a wonderful old time. But whatever. You play an answer, folks. Don't just assume something is broken. Please, please, please play an answer. But it is still, regardless of this, very good. Three distinct flavors of MODOK have already developed in the meta. I'm curious to see if there are more. I would imagine there are not. People are relatively thorough with new cards. But these three distinct flavors, we'll talk about one at a time. So let's first, what do you think, Roy, of MODOK standard discard, the old Dracula build?
Just this straight build? I'm not overly fond of it. Dracula has kind of counter synergy with MODOK in many cases, particularly if you don't draw Apocalypse. And so I think the sort of initial discard decks, like, I mean, I think they might still play MODOK, but I think, I mean, this is definitely where we need Lavin here, because like the traditional discard card is really his jam. But I have been unimpressed by it. I think it's an upgrade in some cases, particularly over Hellcow, because like if you just need to nuke your hand, which sometimes did need to happen in that deck, it's awesome. But in those more like I had to play cards early sort of traditional discard decks, it's really bad. And I also think the traditional deck relies on you just popping things off with Lockjaw, and that's super risky when you have MODOK in your deck. It can be very poorly timed. So
I don't think I agree on that part. Because like you can't get Lockjaw down until three, right? And you're not throwing anything into Lockjaw if you have Collector, who's apparently now a discard card. Who knew?
Well, we'll get to that. That's a different deck.
Well, no, it's in all of them. You just run Collector and Morbius in all versions of this now.
Oh, if we're talking, well, yeah.
Maybe not the Hella version, but like the other versions just run.
The Hell versions I've seen have not been running Collectors.
So like the idea is that so by making 1,000 swarm copies, you're getting you get your Collector to like 10 or 11 power. Cool. It is super duper cool. But like so the idea is I mean all three versions play Lockjaw at this point. This version can play.
The Hella version runs Lockjaw?
Yeah, yeah. The good Hella version. The one I sent you yesterday.
Oh, that one. Okay. I was more
that's
thinking
that. Like, I'm talking about. Google. No, I'm talking. No, no, no. The good version. The one that, like, these. I'm talking about the ones that made Infinite. Like, these are the three good versions. So, like, all three are Lockjaw decks, but none of them, right? Like, what they're playing is fundamentally the discard the swarm game and then bring a bunch of other big stuff back. Yeah?
But that is not what the traditional discard deck is doing. If it does not have Hella, that is not what it is doing.
So the traditional discard decks now fundamentally just add Collector. Like, that's the whole difference. Like, a traditional discard deck cuts two cards and adds Collector and MODOK, and Chris thinks this is the best version of the deck, the Dracula version. Because what you ultimately do is you drop your ideal order is you drop Collector, Lockjaw, Dracula, MODOK into whatchamacallit?
Lockjaw.
Right? MODOK into Lockjaw, at which point you've got Swarm, right? And then you just sort of like shit out all your free Swarms into Lockjaw last turn, discard a bunch of stuff, and then your Dracula becomes huge and your Collector is huge. And ideally at some point you've hit your Morbius with all of those whatchamacallit draws. And if you didn't see Dracula, you've got Morbius, Dracula, and Collector, and they're like three pieces of redundancy because each is somewhere between like 10 and 20 power. Like, that's what the deck is like intended to do. And your backup to I didn't see MODOK is usually just Hellcow. Hellcow is now just worse MODOK, which kind of sucks for Hellcow because I like Hellcow much more, but whatever.
Wait, like Hellcow the card or Hellcow the character more?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think Hellcow is a hilarious character. Where MODOK is a hilarious character. MODOK feels like he's trying too hard to me sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, did you the Hulu show was trying too hard to me.
Yes, but I don't think the Hulu show when I think of MODOK. I think of 90s Iron Man comics.
That's fair. I don't really like 90s Iron Man, but neither here nor there. I think this deck is very good. I think it's likely the single most consistent of the MODOKs, but it's also the one that's like, okay, easiest to counter, let's say.
Like, I found it's the easiest. Yeah, I think it's the least surprising.
Yeah,
and it's the least, like, it has the hot least the lowest ceiling, I think, of all of them. Like, I agree with you that the floor, I'll give that the floor is definitely the highest. But the ceiling is much lower. This is what my experience when, and even if it was our experience, remember when we played it on the second night it came out, where we were doing the thing, but we were frequently like losing lanes by two or three. And that just like was not helping our cube equity. But it was cool as shit though. Like, all three of these decks are really cool to play. Like, the animations are fun, like, cool stuff happens. Like, there's nothing like I didn't even realize until MODOK came out that the game could fast forward itself if there were too many animations. Mm-hmm. So that was like a cool moment when we were playing MODOK and that happened.
I agree with that. So I have not played MODOK Hella, and you have.
I have.
I've seen it played. I've played against it, but I have not played it. It actually beat my like current OP deck that we'll be reviewing shortly. So what is the MODOK Hella? How does it play?
So the MODOK Hella plays a lot like the deck that we were just talking about, except its ideal play is something like, it does not run Collector. At least the version I'm running is not running Collector. It runs, so your ideal play would be something like Morbius on 2 in a lane. And then either Colleen in the same lane or a different lane on 3, or Lockjaw in its own lane. It's very important in this deck that Lockjaw has its own lane and that you just chill with Lockjaw. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, then there are a couple of options. So depend from that point, so let's say you've done your ideal thing. You played Morbs, you played Lockjaw. You're sitting there maybe on turn 4, turn 5. Maybe you've played one other discard card. And if you drew MODOK, you will want to play MODOK into your Lockjaw lane on 5. And hopefully that will discard the swarms in your hand. And then you will be able to also do 2 more cards on turn 6 in there for free. And you are sort of set to go. If you drew Hella, then and you haven't discarded anything, what you do is you dump 2. That's hopefully a draw. That's hopefully a draw that you drew Colleen Wing, and Colleen Wing could discard your swarms, and you drop swarm Hella into your Lockjaw lane on the last turn. And that lets you sort of hopefully pop MODOK or pop something else, Lady Sith, or like one of the other handful of discard cards you have. Because you don't have a lot of discard cards in this deck besides MODOK himself. And ideally MODOK, discard your hand. Hella is the last play it shoots up. If you draw both Hella and MODOK, that is where this deck has some issues. Like, it is really hard to get out of that spot unless you get really lucky with like your discards of from Lady Sif. So I think the deck is really, really strong about 75% of the time because you have really, really good plays with both of your game plans. However, it is really weak about 25% of the time. And the other major drawback to this deck is it loses hard to Cosmo. Like, you can play around it, don't get me wrong. But, like, a Cosmo in your
Lockjaw
lane is way more catastrophic, I think, than any other discard deck that I have played. And that is definitely most of the games I lost with this deck last night, and it wasn't that many. It was maybe I played, like, 10, maybe 12, and I lost, like, 2. We're both to the dog.
Nice.
So it was one of the deck I primarily climbed with last night from about like 33 to 36. And then I climbed a little bit more with Hazmat. So it's a really, really powerful deck. It's probably, I think, of these, the highest ceiling. Mm-hmm. It's also one that plays really unintuitively. And right now, people don't know how to play around it, except for dog. If they don't have dog, they don't know what's the best strategies for them.
Well, what are the best strategies if you don't have dog?
Oh, that's really hard. If you're playing Shuri, so one of my other losses was also to Shuri. If you can take over 2 lanes, like, it is really hard for this deck to beat like a 60 strength Red Skull.
Well, that's like the god combo. That happens extraordinarily
rarely. Or even like a 20 strength, 220 strength She-Hulks. Right, you know, like She-Hulk and Taskmaster. Right, he can sometimes
Morbius be hard isn't doing that.
He's be doing that in one lane. Sometimes your second lane doesn't quite add up to what you want it to be.
Gotcha.
Because of the Hella stuff, right? Like sometimes Hela throws Infinaut in the same lane as Morbius, and you're like, thanks, bro. And that is like, I think the way you beat it is you try to position your cards so that your opponent's Hela has to be ideal.
Okay.
So if you can spread out a decent enough strength that you're contesting three locations, and if your opponent does that thing where your Infinaut ends up on the same place as their Morbius, you're like, cool, that's awesome. You have 60 strength there. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I have won these other two locations because you got like a Lady Sif and a couple of swarms. That is definitely the biggest way I've seen opponents play around the deck that I found really convincing. And then the other one is also pray for Mojo and just hope that the deck's inherent RNG does screw it. Where like, I've been like, all right, I have three cards in my deck. I'm gonna play two swarms Hela. Of course, one of them is going to get Morbius. And it doesn't. Oh, not Morbius, excuse me. MODOK. And it gets like Lady Sif. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then gets the other swarm. And then you play Hela and it doesn't matter. So that would be my advice to somebody who is trying to beat the deck. Play dog. Contest as many lanes as you can and spread your power out pretty well. And of course, Enchantress and things like that also beat it pretty well.
Nice. Okay. The third version of MODOK is the Collector Morbius. It fundamentally treats it as like a combo Devil Dino deck, right? Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a Devil Dino or a Zabu. It's the discard version where Morbius just becomes like a 20.
Yeah.
And Collector is like an 11. And it's a pain in the ass to beat. There are versions that run Mystique in order to copy Morbius. I think that is an actively bad play because these decks really, 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 really want Lockjaw, and a Mystique Lockjaw, a Lockjawed Mystique is absolutely atrocious. It's like a complete disaster. However, the idea is you get Collector set up in one lane, you get Morbius set up in one lane, right? And then you just start going dog, 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 dog with Swarms and Apocalypse in hand. On turn six, you drop the Apocalypse in whichever of the other lanes seems more threatened, and you have like a 20 power Apocalypse, an 11 power Collector, and a like 15 to 20 power Morbius. It is super cool. This is my favorite of them by a lot. It basically, it's very similar to the first one, except it sort of like drops the real game plan, except for the like little two drops, which I think is adorable. If people decide to just play Polaris, the deck is dead, right? You just stick those two in the same spot and win everywhere else. It shouldn't be terribly difficult to do that late in the game. But the game is like, it's just so fun. Roy and I played it a bunch the first night that Monday. We played it Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an absolute blast to play. I think it is like the least consistent, most fragile of the three decks. But if you want something fun that wins a lot and goes over the top in ways that your opponent does not expect, then that is the version for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the coolest version. I think the on a like just pure fun, I think both the traditional discard and the sort of like all in on Collector and Morbius versions are the most like fun. While I do think that actually the Hela version might end up being the most like competitive, have the highest ceiling of all of them. So it might be the best Hela deck, to be honest with you.
It is also worth noting that Chris Levin, not here, disagrees and thinks that the first one is the best. So we all, each host has a different favorite. Sorry, we can't be more unified in this. We just don't agree completely. I've also never played the Hela version, so what do I know?
So what else has risen in the meta, Aaron?
Okay, I think the meta has three decks in it right now that are like really, really consistently seen. One should go away, but I'm seeing it constantly. Deck one is the discard stuff. MODOK discard is all over the place. The other thing that's all over the place is Shuri big stuff. Shuri is still limited in that everyone doesn't have her. But Shuri is in a lot of different places. And finally, we have an awful lot of Cerebro 2 and 3. Oh, I'm sorry. And there's still some like leftover Zabu and Surfer floating around from people who are very stubborn. I think Zabu, by the way, is still completely fine in the Darkhawk deck, and the Darkhawk deck might still be a tier one deck. I've been crushing Surfer, but I'm seeing an awful lot of Cerebro up in the 70s with a fairly high MMR.
Why do you think that is, though? Why do you think people have turned to Cerebro?
It's the closest answer to like a pool three, just like I had Surfer, now I can play Cerebro. Like, these are just good cards that have a lot of power. In Cerebro 2 in particular, that storm closed off location that it looks like you're going to lose, that you're adding like, I don't know, what, how much does Cerebro give? Plus 2 or plus 3?
Plus 2, I believe.
Okay, so you're adding four to every card on that location later in the game, and you've got Nightcrawler to jump over there and stuff, is a really nice way to steal one location at that point. Like, it's really hard for your opponent to read where to contest, right? Spoiler, contest the lane that has Cerebro and Mystique, because they're weak as hell. But, like, that deck is around a lot. Also, if you read that your opponent is playing Cerebro, be smart and don't Zero or Sauron your Red Skull, because that will mess up their Cerebro real, real bad.
Oh, that's cool. A really good point.
Yeah.
All right, what's deck two?
That is Cerebro, Big Shuri.
Oh, Big Shuri, sorry.
Yeah. Big Shuri and MODOK, I think, are the biggest prongs of the meta. And you're still seeing a little bit of leftover people trying to do the Zabu four-cost thing to varying degrees of success with largely, name of the card, largely Quinjet to try and, like, use Moon Girl on three with, like, go Quinjet, Zabu, Moon Girl to then have negative two to the four costers they had in their hand and still compete, and have Devil Dino, like the KM best Devil Dino version, be the backup plan. Deck is still very good. I don't think it's as good as Shuri decks, though.
What about Galactus?
Oh, right. I don't know why, but I haven't seen Galactus at all. We should also talk about that other card. But yeah, I haven't seen Galactus at all since the reset. I don't know why. I've seen Galactus fairly regularly before. And now I'm just not. I still think Galactus is T1. I don't understand why people don't think Galactus is T1, except it's hard to get a hold of. The last card is there are a couple of Thanos builds that are extremely skill intensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's the ongoing one and the one we played last week. What would we call that?
Like a tempo? The tempo one? Yeah,
the tempo-y lockjaw thing. But those decks are absolutely excellent. I think their biggest problem is that they're so high skill cap. Right? Like,
I haven't played a lot or played against the ongoing one, but just looking at it and watching videos of it, it doesn't seem as skill intensive as the like tempo one that we were playing, which it really was really intricate. Like, because the margin of error was very small. I feel like any deck that's running Spectrum, the margin of error is a lot like looser.
I'll need to see more. Maybe we can throw it together on your account and give it some games to get a feel for it. But I don't know. I don't know yet. Like, so the thing about Thanos decks is you can't rely on seeing any given six, even though like it's an ongoing deck. Like, there's no guarantee you're going to run into Spectrum, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Because you increase the deck size so much. So I still think there's that skill gap of like figuring out what play lines you're going for in the deck and like what your goals are. Because that's like what the deck really is about. Like, it's about the using the stones to figure out a play line. And there's like, depending on what stones, what order, what your opponent's playing, there's usually like way more play lines than the average deck. I really, 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 if you followed me on any social media or see me posting anywhere, I like super desperately want Ghost, but Thanos is so fun. It took a lot of self-control not to just buy him. And I only have 6,000 tokens right now, so.
I would definitely say of the pool six cards, Thanos is the most straightforwardly fun. Like, Thanos is definitely maybe not the strongest of them, but I think he's definitely the most fun. I think also another important thing is just, and this is something I've said before about Thanos, is there's just a lot of air in the deck. And anyone who plays cantrip decks in Magic the Gathering or other card games, it's like cantrips are great until they're not. They do let you churn through your deck, But sometimes all you do is turn your deck into more air. And, you know, there's nothing better than being like, okay, I've drawn four extra cards this game. All I need to do on this last turn is draw this one card. And that one card is the stone that gives you two other stones. You're like, oh, okay, cool. I lose. Doesn't matter what I did before this. Like,
ideally, that's why Lockjaw is in the deck, right?
It is, it is. Well, oh, you're like, okay, all Lockjaw needs to do is bring one of my big boys in, and it brings, you know, Reality Stone, and Reality Stone flips into Vault or whatever. Anyway, it's I do love Thanos, though. It's definitely a deck that I really enjoy playing, and I would recommend anyone who does have Thanos to just try it, and it is really fun. So sleeper decks are. Is there any deck, Glazer, that you have your eye on that you are like, this is something I want to see more of?
Yep. I mean, beyond Sarah, which we already discussed, and as we were talking, Canvas just was like, oh, by the way, I've gone from 100 to 137 with Sarah control. So, yeah, guess what? It's back. Valkyrie is busto. Like, everything I've said about the meta, Valkyrie just runs. Valkyrie, like, destroys. I'm going to have to go back to putting Rogue into it if I keep seeing all this Cerebro. And she's a dead card against, help me, against,
Galactus?
No. Sure, but I don't care about that. Valkyrie just owns Galactus as a general rule. If I have Ghost, right, like, which is the big question, or, like, I can just have ignored that lane. Sometimes I just have in Valkyrie lane sitting at, like, -6. You're going to have priority in that lane, right? I can just, you'll have priority. I can drop Rogue and Valkyrie, and then I just win that location, right? Like, I stole your null. I got all that power, and now I Valkyried. Like, GGs, have a great day. Actually, no, I can't. I don't have enough mana for that. That's not true. I have to just pick one or the other. But fine, if I can read you properly, I should be okay. It also is really, really, really good against the big Shuri decks, because when, like, your whole lane is Red Skull, right? So my Valkyrie wins that lane, and you're usually only really able to compete in two lanes at that point. So, like, it's relatively good at that. It's going to have to run Rogue mostly for Cerebro, because otherwise Cerebro just beats its face in.
That's fair. So for me, the sleeper deck is the Luke Cage Hazmat deck. I think that the Spectrum version that has sort of two endgames, either a Luke and Hazmat endgame or a Spectrum endgame, is really strong. I think it's underrated. I think the problem is, of course, there's only one Luke Cage in the game, but that's okay, because Luke Cage isn't necessarily necessary when you have the Spectrum play. And I've just been really impressed by it. I've been impressed by its consistency, its ability to be flexible, and yeah, I think it's a big sleeper in the meta.
Cool. I have not liked that deck, but I'm willing to be proven wrong.
All right, so we have one more quick segment here with what is this infinite deck, Laser, that you got here for us?
So TLSG has a deck that our Discord has named Black Skull. I want to talk about what my changes are. Mobile Gamer just posted, I had it up, that's why I was on Twitter in the first place. He got to infinite partially with a very similar deck to this. He's running Arrow as his tech piece in the deck. It is, the TLSG version is Sunspot, Zero, Armor, Maximus, Shuri, Wong, Taskmaster, Black Panther, Red Skull, Zola, America Chavez, and She-Hulk. So my changes to the deck are, Zero is there only for Red Skull. I don't care that much about turning off Red Skull. And in every other instance, Zero is a bad card. So for the time being, that's Nightcrawler for me. But you should know by now that that's a placeholder. That's Ghost Spot to protect me from Shang-Chi later. And if you can't Shang-Chi this deck and you can't Arrow it, the deck just straight wins. I also didn't like Maximus. I was running to just a little too much Shang-Chi, and you never really know if you're giving them Shang-Chi by playing Maximus on three. But the feeling that you might really sucks. So I made that my Zabu spot, and Zabu is literally only there for the singular reason of playing Wong into Shuri right now and just being like, okay, cool. So I won this game. Let's have a great day. Snap, Wong, Shuri. Who cares what the hell you play after? Its strength is completely stupid. Once I have Ghost, that becomes much better. Zabu becomes much better because now on four, I still really, really, really want a Shuri, right? But I can Zabu first. I can play my Ghost before Shuri, and that's another turn I have to get my Shuri down, my Ghost down outside of one and two. So with those two uses, I think that I really, really appreciate those changes. There are several play lines, right? There's the obvious Wong or Shuri into Black Panther. Ideally, with that play line, you really want to Zola them around. And if it goes in the right order, you get very, very, very silly Black Panthers. You can also do Red Skull into Taskmaster, Red Skull into Zola after a Shuri. Doesn't work with Wong. Wong is only for Panther, really. Panther and Shuri. And you can also, I like this play a lot more if you have Sunspot out, the double Infinite play, where you skip five and then go She-Hulk and Taskmaster for 220 power things on turn six. So there are three different, like, distinct play lines that all put, at the minimum is basically 40 power into play on the last turn. It's pretty nice. It is the deck I rode earlier today from 70 to 76 in an hour. And unless Shang-Chi becomes the meta, it's going to be completely incredible. And we are assuming that she shows up in my shop 5 days for me not really caring about Shang-Chi becoming the meta.
Hopefully Ghost shows up.
Although Ghost has the negative of with the Zola play, right?
Yes.
Where like if I'm not doing the full turn six play, they can now mess me up before I can Zola. It is still good with Taskmaster. Taskmaster doesn't care if the thing was destroyed. It's still the last card you played.
Yeah, that's one of the interactions that's weird to me, based on some how other cards operate. But c'est la vie. All right. Speaking though of Ghost, we are in the last major section of our episode, which is the news. And there are a bunch of new cards to talk about. So, Aaron, what do we want to start with? Do we want to start with the old new cards or the new cards?
Let's just do a quick of the three old new cards, and then we'll talk about the three new cards. So, Dazzler has a home. Dazzler's home apparently is that Thanos ongoing deck, the Spectrum deck. It's very solid in that. I still think that card is really overrated, and I'd kind of rather just run another four cost ongoing that's decent. Problem is, there aren't that many. Thanos isn't exactly leaving one thing alone in the lane or one lane all to itself. But what's its name? Omega Red is a solid card. Like, there's enough solid cards that I think Dazzler is just really, really, really hard to pull off. I'm going to put some thought into what I would actually replace Dazzler with. It's probably another four, though it also might just be replace something else in the M'Baku in the deck with Zabu, and then just like add another decent four and call it a day and let that be how I do it. Whatever. That's a conversation for later time. Dazzler has a home. I still think she's at best mediocre, even in her one singular good home. Shauna has completely disappeared. You never see anyone playing her anymore. She has proven to be as bad as you think. And our friend Bootman, part of the reason we were doing this is he was going to be on, is a Shadow King aficionado and is running a contest over on his YouTube page for whoever can build him the best Shadow King deck. I think I did that, but he's also got a form where you like explain how to play it. And I haven't had the time to fill out that form. But I think Shadow King is a very good card. I still think it's just worse than Valkyrie, especially with the Zabu nerf and the Surfer nerf. I think it was positioned to be an actual meta answer, but it was going to be crushed by the pool 5 nature of its existence.
I think those are both all fair points. Let's talk about the newest cards. So you've talked endlessly about Ghost, but I'm going to read Ghost real quick for you. So Ghost is a 1 energy, 2 strength card that has an ongoing. Your cards are always revealed last, which means their on-reveal abilities happen last. All right, Glazer, you are the biggest fan of this card of anyone I have encountered on the internet. Why is this card so good, and why are you so excited for this Valentine's Day gift that Second Dinner is giving you?
The only card I really don't want in concert with this is Cosmo, right? I really want Cosmo to reveal first to shut down whatever ongoing nonsense they're doing as a general rule. But Shang-Chi, Enchantress, big stuff revealing last on the last turn of the game, all of those kinds of things are completely, completely amazing for control decks. Or for big things decks. And like, so the game has become the battle of who can keep priority, and I think that's really boring. So it means in order to win a lot of games, you have to keep priority for a lot of the game. If you can drop this on 4 with a 3 drop, I feel like you're just going to win a lot of games as like, they're like, shit, how do I play around this Shang-Chi that's coming? Shit, how do I play around this Enchantress that's coming? And also it adds the extra mind game of people thinking you have that. So you're going to get a lot more cubes from like free cubes from retreats as they assume that's going to happen. All of that in concert means I think that like in both the very, very big guy decks and in the Shuri control decks, this is going to be an absolutely stellar card.
It's impossible for me to add more to that. And I have a lot of things to say about the next card, which is Stature. So Stature is a 5 energy, 7 strength card that has the following ability. Costs 1 if your opponent discarded a card from their hand this game. That is, this game does make that a little bit better than it could be otherwise. But I think that this card did Cassie Lang dirty. I don't think that there are enough effects to make this card like really strong. I do not think that this is a very good top-down design of what Stature slash Stinger slash Giant Girl slash Ant Woman, like whatever slash Wasp, whatever like code name you want to give Cassie Lang. I'm really actually frustrated by this card. I do know that many people are excited that she might make Black Bolt playable, that you could do something like, you know, play Black Bolt on 5, play her and another 5 drop, and that might be enough power. Maybe that makes her good enough, particularly with the redundancy of Moon Knight. And of course, if we do live in this MODOK is broken discard meta, then she's a good meta answer. But I think overall, this card is like really disappointing for me and is in the range of Cyclops in sort of top-down misses of cards in the game. Aaron, do you agree or disagree?
No, I think she's fine. I don't think Stature should be like a meta card or the best card in the game if we're going by like comic stuff. And I think she's good. I think she's going to have a clear home, and I think it's going to be a decent deck. Does she make Black Bolt playable? Yeah, kind of, probably. Like, so, I mean, okay. So here's the play pattern. Ready? You play Black Bolt on 5, you have in 5-8, right? Then you have a 1-7 in your hand, and then you have a 5-15 in your hand. You've now played 30 power on the last 2 turns of the game. Seems pretty solid. You can also do the Black Bolt thing and then Shuri her and get 22 points of power over the last 2 turns. These are all decent things. I think these are good things to be able to do. Are they going to be like the meta? No, but I think they might be like good for some surprise wins. And like, I actually think not in a discard meta, because Apocalypse will be anywhere, but like that Black Bolt play is often a lot more annoying than you think it's going to be. Imagine you drop Wong into this deck, for example. Right? Like, because now we have like a Wong Shuri package. And like, we're not bad. We're not bad. And now like, we've got that combo and we've got potential Black Panther things, right? Like, and now you've got a deck.
Yeah, that's fair. Last but not least, I think is the most interesting of these cards on a pure game design level. And that is Kang the Conqueror. He is a 5-cost, 0-strength card. Whoa, great in Mr. Negative. On reveal, look at what your opponent did, then restart the turn without Kang. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Aaron?
I have no idea. Card is fundamentally unreadable for the time being.
Yeah. There's some things that are like unconfirmed about what Kang does. Like, for example, do you draw a card? Does your opponent draw a card? Is it like Daredevil? Like, the one thing that's really unclear to me, is this like Daredevil where only you restart the turn?
No,
both players restart
the turn. Both players restart the turn.
Okay.
So they both get to choose to do totally different things if they want. You would draw a different card, though, seemingly. They would draw the same card again.
Is that actually confirmed how this card works?
Someone said it was confirmed, but I don't know if I believe him. Is that a fair way to put that?
That is a fair way to put that. Like, if you draw a card with this card, I think that makes this card way more powerful than it might read if you don't.
Well, you, like, have to, right?
You don't have to, no. You just imagine, like, all right, you know where the ideal plays are for your opponent. Like, are they really going to change their plays up that much? Like, if it would really have owned you? Like, you also know they have the Shang-Chi, right?
They
play Shang-Chi, they let you play your armor, which you may not have wanted to play before.
You don't play those in the same deck, I would assume.
Maybe. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm interested to see what kind of cards Kang encourages you to play. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really interesting. And I don't think that there's like an effect in any other digital card game that's quite like this. So this is really interesting design space. It is also, unlike Stature, a huge top-down win. Like, this card screams Kang the Conqueror to me. Agree or disagree?
Oh yeah, 100%. I absolutely love it. I think it's super fun. I don't know what to do with it, so someone else is going to have to break it. Usually, like you heard me talk about Stature, right? Like, usually I have a pretty good idea of what to do with these cards. Kang is too galaxy brain for me.
Well, Kang also has some sweet variants. Here I'm looking at these cards real quick. But we'll do that in a future episode. So, Aaron, overall, what do you think of this latest batch of February cards?
I think every single card in February is better than every single card in January, outside of the season pass card.
Better than Shadow King, our friend, yeah. Bootman's favorite card.
Yeah, I think Shadow King.
Because Valkyrie was December, right?
Yeah, I believe Valkyrie was December. That's why she's pull four now. So I believe so. So I think Shadow King and like. So Shadow King's probably really good against Collector, but I don't think Shadow King is very good against ongoing cards, and the meta we're looking at is full of ongoing cards.
We are in the ongoing meta. All right, so that brings us to our variants of the week. We've picked, of course, in honor of our new season pass card, MODOK. So Aaron, which of these MODOK variants do you like the most?
So I'm torn between two. I really like the Assassin variant by John Rauch and David Lafuente. But I think the winner is actually the Pixel. I don't usually like Pixels, but this is the kind of card that deserves a Pixel. MODOK is an 8-bit character if ever there was one.
That's completely fair. This is one where I do not like the baby variant actually very much at all.
I think it's creepy.
Yeah, it's weird. I like this like... I don't know, Giglio Rossoni, is that how you say it? Variant that is sort of like more like a realistic MODOK, I think, is a really cool version. But I mean, how is it possible to go wrong with the Pixel version? So, I mean, those would definitely be the two that I would be thirsty for. But I mean, I will say, this is something I'm not sure if I said on the show or not. All of the variants in this season pass are terrible, except for the MODOK one. I hate the Ant-Man and Wasp variants in this set. Like, I do not like it. Actually, this is the first season pass that I actually actively dislike the cosmetics that they gave us.
Fair enough.
So, but that's just my personal opinion. And you know what is also my personal opinion? That you should engage with us on our social medias. All right. You should definitely engage with us at our Twitter account, which is at SnapJudgeCast. We also have a Facebook page at Snap Judgments Podcast. And most importantly, we have our own channels on the Snap Fan Discord. So please join the Snap Fan Discord, engage with us. On that Discord, Aaron is always in there. I'm in there sometimes. Lavin is in there a medium amount of time. And so you can get three of your regular hosts there at different times. And you also get to support the best Marvel Snap supplemental website. So really, it's win, win, win. And last but not least, you should reach out to us at our email, which is snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Glazer, on the way out, before I say goodbye to you, what do you recommend to our listeners, for this week?
So I've decided from now on, I'm going to try and recommend a different piece of Marvel Snap Media and shine a spotlight on some of our fellow content creators. So this week, it's another podcast by our friend John Tata and his cohort. It is called The Daily Snap. They're available on all the usual podcast places. Check them out.
Well, unlike Glazer, I am not generous. I am going to talk about something contemporaneous. Please, I'm asking you, if you're listening to our show, to do me one favor this week as I lose my voice after having cheered for our basketball team and an awesome cheerleader battle that I witnessed on our halftime. Do not buy Hogwarts Legacy. It is not worth it. J.K. Rowling is out there doing active damage to communities of people. I understand arguments for removing the art and artist, but not in this specific case where J.K. Rowling is using her fame, influence, and platform to really, really damage the lives of our trans friends, neighbors, and loved ones. And their lives and their safety is much, much more important than your childhood, adolescent, young adult, or in my case, middle-aged fantasy of being a role-playing a wizard at Hogwarts. So please, I am asking you to actively not buy Hogwarts Legacy. Well, on that note, I'm going to snap us out of here. Glazer, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Peace.
All right. Stay safe, folks. And until next week, keep on snapping.